Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Take Two Radio. I'm Pam, your host, and with me tonight, of course, is Dawn, my co-host, my friend, my buddy, my Goomba. Oh, I'm back now.
I thought maybe you were going to wander off there into La La Land. I didn't know. Hello. How are you? You know, we have way too much fun doing this, I must tell you.
I know, right? And if they only heard us behind the scenes, I got to call her a dork at least once a day. So otherwise,
today I think it's been twice so far, and the day is still young. So, and speaking of today being New Year's Eve, it's the last day of 2012. I really haven't hardly had time to wrap my head around 2012 yet, and here we are at the end of it within a few hours. It'll be a brand new year. Welcome, hello, 2013. But
exactly.
My gosh, I mean, it has been a year of ups and downs and highs and lows. I mean, gosh, I don't know about you, but my social media feeds all day have just been littered with, you know, happy new year, so glad 2012 is coming to an end. It's been a great year. It's been a horrible year, worst year, best year. I mean, you've seen a little bit of everything, so I think for this year alone, it's been a really mixed bag of stuff for folks. So, but you know, that's the great thing about a brand new year is that it's kind of like a fresh start. It's a new chapter, and I'm not talking about let's get on the hardcore diet as of tomorrow at 8 a.m. and, you know, eat raw vegetables for the next 3 months and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, I think for a lot of people it's synonymous, you know, when they think of it being a new year, especially if it's been a bad year or there's been a lot of more lows than highs. A new year can kind of signify a new beginning. And so, but I want to wish you a happy new year, Pam.
And I wish you and your family a happy new year.
Thank you. I think it's going to be a great year. What do you think?
I think so, too. If it's going to start out like it's ending, then
I mean, these last 7 weeks, I say it a lot on the show, but you're just rocking and rolling. I mean, I just cannot believe how quickly the success you've seen in such a short period of time with the show and just some of the great things that you're doing already, and I'm just so to be part of it all. I mean, to let me, even though you call me a dork, but it's great to be part of this, and I'm really excited about some of the things we're going to be unveiling in 2013 for the listening audience, and you know, that I think is going to take this to the next level in terms of what we're doing. So it's very exciting. I'm ready for it to get here. Hurry up, 2013.
Most definitely.
Now, and you know, and I say all that to kind of preface them. I think our show tonight kind of caps off the last 7 weeks of the success you've had here. You know, our guest is, you know, it's so inspiring, and we were fortunate enough to have him on earlier today, and we are doing pre-recorded, but you know, it just, as he spoke today, I was just thinking to myself, wow, you know, so inspiring, and he totally pulled everything together for what this year has come to mean for so many people. It's just been, you know, it's been one of those things, and I think this is a great way to end our year.
I totally agree. The interview we did today totally touched my heart and made me think about myself and my life and things that have happened and where I need to be and where I need to go.
Yeah, myself included. You could not help but listen to our guest and not feel that. You know, I had cold chills quite a bit throughout the interview as he was talking about different things, you know, and it really hit home, I think, in a lot of ways. And as the listeners will hear tonight in just a few short moments, I think they're going to be inspired and very moved as well.
I agree. And we wish each and every one of you a happy, healthy, safe, and blessed new year. And we want to thank you for joining us during the last 7 weeks of 2012, and we welcome you to join us and thank you from our hearts for 2013.
Yes, very much. I second that. So, welcome to 2013 because it's right around the corner.
Yeah, some people are already celebrating that.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
on other
well,
sides
you know,
of the world.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, lest we not fall behind here, huh?
Right.
So I guess it depends on where you live, whether we're coming in behind these guys or ahead of others. So, you know, but it's a great evening. And you know, just say if you're out tonight, be safe. Don't drink and drive, and have a designated driver, because we want to wake up tomorrow and not read very bad headlines. We get enough of that as it is. So be safe, be smart, and have fun. So
yes, take a taxi, take a bus, have a designated driver, call somebody for a ride. Do what you got to do. I mean, I just grilled my daughter on, you know, she's getting ready to go out, and just grilled her on who's driving, and she says they're taking a taxi, so that makes me feel better.
Yeah, well, that's good, and I hope that they will have fun and be safe all at the same time. So that's the key on a night like tonight, because there's enough knuckleheads out there who won't adhere to that. And, you know, my son is actually at a friend's. They're having a little get-together, and it ends at 1, and I said, please be careful driving, because from the midnight to 1 o'clock hour, it'll, you know, people will be trying to get from point A to point B, and that's when it's not a real good time to be on the road. So.
Exactly. And I wanted to let the listeners know that even though we have a pre-recorded show that we did earlier today, our chat room is open, and you're more than welcome to join us there as the interview goes on, and you know, we'll chat along with you.
Mm-hmm.
But today we had the very wonderful pleasure of interviewing Rock Wilk. Over the past 6 years, Rock Wilk has planted countless seeds nationwide, performing Broke Wide Open in parks, art galleries, and on the streets and subways of New York City. He could be found in any location where people were compelled to listen and learn about his transfixing journey. Undoubtedly, word traveled far and wide, and now his story has emerged on stage. Broke Wide Open is the story of Wilk's life in the foster care system and subsequent adoption into a Jewish household, followed by a hesitant search for his biological mother. It's a touching story of love, loss, family, relationships, and discovering one's identity and a place in the world. And a lot of us can relate to that.
Yes, most definitely. And also, Rain Pryor, who is an actress, singer, comedian, director, and author of Jokes My Father Never Taught Me, Life, Love, and Loss with Richard Pryor. She is the director. No,
she's
the
producer.
Excuse me, my mistake. She's the producer of Broke Wide Open. And when you hear Rock talk in the next few minutes about you know, his experience in the show, you will be compelled to check it out if you live in New York. Pam and I were saying we wish we could go, or you know, it was coming near us, because wow. Just a phenomenal young man, and everything he had to say just drew me in today. I was blown away by how inspiring he is.
Exactly. And I'm hoping that you'll all get what we got, and I think that you will. So if you hold on a second, we'll bring you to the interview with Rock Wilk, and enjoy, and we'll chat in the chat room with you. Let's go ahead and just start. You are a composer and performer and playwright for the play that you star in.
Right.
Broke Wide Open.
Yep.
And it's a show about your real-life struggles with being adopted and the search for your biological mother and finding answers to questions about who you are and where you belong. So tell us more about it, how you came about making this in your life into a play.
Well, Broke Wide Open actually started in a really interesting way. I was going through kind of a difficult time. My mother had recently passed away, who was my adoptive mother. So for me, that was like kind of like the last remnants of my this family that had saved my life in my mind, you know. And also my marriage had split up. And so I was going through just a rough time. And I have a mentor whose name is actually Jack Rollins. He's a famous old entertainment manager. He managed Woody Allen and Robin Williams and Billy Crystal and David Letterman, a bunch of really well-known artists. And he's like kind of like a second father to me. And he he encouraged me to do an album because, you know, I was in the music business for a long time. And he encouraged me to do an album because he felt like, you know, you're going through a rough time. I feel like you just need to get this out of your body. You've never really done a project that was really revealing of who you are. And so he really pushed me and encouraged me to do it, but to just do it for the art, like not trying to do business or get a record deal or whatever. He said, just do the work. And so I did, you know, and I started to write it, and I write on the train. So I just got on the G train in Brooklyn, and I just started writing and writing and writing and writing. And I'd go see him every day after I wrote, and we discussed what I did. And then after about 3 months of writing all these songs, I locked myself in a studio, and I just recorded the whole album myself. You know, I play a bunch of instruments. So I did everything, and I did all the vocals, and I came out with this album. And then everybody who heard the record thought that it sounded like a play. And I had always wanted to develop some kind of a play. Mm-hmm. And so that's really how it started. And then it became this catharsis for me, like, 'cause the album is a very personal, intimate collection of work. And so then that became this live, breathing performance piece. And I started to kind of write along, you know, like in between the songs, you know, I would write like monologues and things like that. And I started to perform it in the street, and I developed the whole play in the streets, like in the parks around Brooklyn and in Manhattan and on street corners. And I would ask people to like just kind of check it out, you know, and see, mm-hmm. you know, I told them I was working on a play, and they would sit there for 2 hours, and we would have like these impromptu kind of Q&As. And that's really how I developed it. And then it just went from there. I wound up going all over the world with it, you know, all over the country. It's been an amazing process for me.
Wow.
Well, Rock, that's just an amazing, amazing story. And, you know, they say that music and writing can be probably some of the most therapeutic stuff that you can apply to yourself when you're going through something. And how healing was that for you to be able to, you know, to kind of put it down on paper and kind of get it out of your system, so to speak?
It was very healing for me. It was necessary. It kind of saved my life because I was in a very dark place. And it was the first time that I had dealt with a lot of issues that I dealt with in this. So it's like I feel like I took all of this baggage that I had and I turned it into beautiful art. And it really transformed me. It's been like a transformative process over the last – I've abandoned my whole life for 6 years for this project. I mean, literally,
wow.
I have written every day for 6 years. And in fact, I wrote the ending to the play 2 weeks before I opened this run at the 45th Street Theater a few months ago because I had hundreds of endings because I couldn't get the ending because I was living it. You know, I was living this story, and the story starts before I was born, but it ends really now. And so I literally could not get to the ending until without having had gone through all that I've been through for the last six and a half years. And so it was very healing, but at the same time, you know, there came a point where I realized that, you know, you can't go through therapy on stage. It's not really that interesting. You know, people are going to be interested for about 10 minutes and then they're just going to be annoyed. So at some point it became a play, you know, and it became, it's always been a very visceral kind of emotional thing for me, but at the same time, I realized that it became a good play when it was no longer all about me. It became about everybody who I was sharing it with. It became everybody's story, and it's not even about my adoption, really. It's more about questions of identity and love and loss and, you know, things like that, like finding home. And I think everybody is looking for where they belong, like where they fit in and how to feel comfortable in your own skin, you know. So that's when I realized it became a better play.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, what kind of an impact that this has had on your audiences, because I know as I was reading your bio, I was just drawn in. It was, you know, because it, like you said, it wasn't as much about your adoption piece as it was of you going on this journey, not only a life journey, but a journey of really trying to find out, you know, who you were, where you fit into this world, and what your purpose is. And I would dare say you've certainly served your purpose and lived it.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, it's true. The impact is really what the whole thing is about for me, because, like, if you look, if you look at my homepage on the website, and if you look at the Your Thoughts page where people leave comments, you know, the response to this play has been so profound. It's almost been like, at first it was a little scary to me because the response is so intimate. And so, like, I've done Q&As after every show for the past 6 years until this run, where I didn't do them after all these shows at the run. But, you know, the first 6 years I did Q&As after everything, whether I'm on the street or in a theater at a festival or something like that, I've done Q&As. And, you know, the audience tends to talk about the play for about 10 minutes, but then they start talking about the most intimate details of their lives. Mm-hmm. And it's been remarkable what people have talked about at these Q&As, like, so, you know, stuff that they had never talked about before out loud. And I feel like it provided like a safe haven for people to come and talk. And I think maybe, you know, something that I'm really proud of is that I think that it has people kind of go into themselves and start to question and kind of dig into their own lives to try to find more for themselves. And, you know, I feel like it's also been a collaborative project because I've done it out in the streets, and I've been doing it with people the whole time. So I feel like it's been born of the community, you know, like, but a community,
right.
I've gone literally all over the world. So it's been born of everybody. And in fact, you know, I don't know if you know, but I mean, to get to this run, to do this, to actually get to the 45th Street Theater, I did a fundraising campaign called 500 Names myself. And I literally got over 500 people to give me money to raise the money to get to this theater. And the list, if I can get 500 people to give me anything, even if it's a dollar, I feel like I'll raise enough money to go do a run. And I also want to see if people really wanted me to do it. You know, like, have I annoyed you to death? Should I stop? Or do you want me to keep moving? And so, like, people just started sending me money. And then something crazy happened. Like, I got an email from this woman one night, and she goes, please accept this donation in honor of my father who died last week. He would be so proud of you. And then all of a sudden, people started donating in honor of deceased relatives. Of one woman, a pregnant woman, donated in the name of her baby that was about to be born. I got an email from a woman who said, I want number 423. I'm like, why 423? And she said to me, well, my son was born on April 23rd, and he was killed in Afghanistan, and I want to memorialize him on the list. And I was like, damn. I said, yo, this story that started as all about me is definitely not all about me anymore. You know, this is about everybody. And so it's been the most beautiful catharsis for me. You know, it's really been quite amazing.
And little did you know that when you began this process, you know, for yourself, to dive in and deal with some critical issues that you needed to deal with, you know, that as an end result, it ended up being just this incredible thing that so many people could identify with. And I think in a way, as you've helped yourself, you've helped so many, you know, open
right.
up and dig into themselves to really deal with some hardcore issues that, you know, I think a lot of times we're scared to face ourselves. And and it takes a lot of courage to take that first look inside ourselves at who we really are. And you have really, you know, created a platform for people to do that. And it's just amazing what has happened as a result of all of this.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, what's interesting is that's exactly how this started, because Mr. Rollins said to me, he goes, you know, I want you to do this project, but I want you to really, really be willing to reveal yourself. Like, I want you to open the window and really, truly let people know who you are. Like, I want it to be intimate. Be brave. You know, be courageous and let them know you. And I'm like, why? And he goes, because I believe that if you really allow people to know who you are, which he said, by the way, which is what all the great artists do. Like, the greatest, greatest artists are the ones who really reveal themselves. He said, if you're willing to do that, I am confident that people will love you as much as I do. And I was like, wow, you know. And then he said to me, and I also believe that this work will serve you for the rest of your life. Now, I feel like the greatest part of this whole thing has been, like what you just said, you know, I've been dealing with myself, but obviously it's like kind of given other people permission to do similar things, you know. And that's been a great gift for me. I mean, you know, it's like when you feel like you really – because, you know, I've always been the kind of person, like, I don't want to feel like I'm just like taking up space in the world. Like I don't have kids, you know. I feel like I want to make some kind of contribution to this world. You know, I'm always afraid that I have no purpose. And so this project for me has made so clear what my purpose is, and I feel like I really did find what is home for me, and that's what the end of the play is. It's about finding home and what home means to me and what home means to anybody.
Right, and where
and
you
so,
belong.
Yeah.
It's not only therapeutic for you, but it's therapeutic for your audience, and no matter where they are in the world and who they are, it's therapeutic in some way to them.
Yeah, I think so. And in a, you know, in the best kind of way, because, you know, the play is, it's obviously, it's very kind of deep and provocative, but it's also really funny. And, you know, when I first started working on it, it was very angry. You know, it was like, because it's easy for me to be really hard on stage and powerful, but the hardest thing for me was to truly be vulnerable and allow people to really know who I was, to show the funny sides and the vulnerable sides. And when I started to do that is when everything started to change. And so it's like an opportunity to explore, but in the most entertaining kind of way. It's like 2 hours of this high energy. It's a musical, you know. It's like a beautiful theatrical experience. But I always tell people it's a beautiful shared experience because it's not like your conventional play where you know, you go and the people just do the play, and it's very interactive. I mean, people scream at me on stage, and you know, they laugh and they cry, and I break the wall and go out there and talk to them. And it's really, it's definitely a play. You know, it's not like it's scripted, and every word is scripted, and it's a play, and it's a journey, and there are a lot of characters, but at the same time, it is certainly out of the box. It's renegade production.
And I can understand where you're coming from with being adopted. Now, I'm not adopted, but my father was, and I've always had questions all my life of who part of me really is and who part of my children are, and that, because he's one person that never wanted to know who his real parents were, his biological parents were.
Right.
But I've always questioned that, and I've lived with that through my whole life. So I can kind of, you know, feel what you're feeling with that.
Well, you know, I've always been very ambivalent about it because I was like, what if I don't like this person? Like, you know, do I really want to open this can of worms? And, you know, also I've had these weird fears too, like, what if I find this woman and she's in a wheelchair and she has some horrible neuromuscular disease or something? Like, I don't want to have to expect anything like that in my life. I've always felt just like me, and I'm good. And I don't have any of that kind of expectation in my life that people live with. Like, you know, people are like, my parents had cancer, so I'm going to get cancer. Or, I don't have any of that. And then I thought, you know, what if she, you know, what if she's like a racist or something, or something that really would bother me? So, but at the same time, when I learned about her story, you know, she had such an incredibly crazy story of her life, I became very curious. And, you know, we're all curious about who we are, so I just happened to be adopted. And I was fostered 3 times before I was adopted. So, you know, I started to ask questions, and it just became – so, you know, what I realized was that all this time I was not looking for her. I was looking for me. If I ever found her, that would be, you know, I wouldn't find her. We would just come together somehow. It would be like somebody actually who came to my show mailed me the movie August Rush. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No, I haven't.
It's about a story of a kid who was given up for adoption, and then they suddenly, somehow, years later, he and his biological parents come together in a very kind of fated kind of way. So, I, you know, I feel like, well, I guess in the back of my mind, I do have this feeling like I want to do this play for as many people as possible so that maybe one day this woman will be out there, or maybe even my biological father. I don't know. But,
and maybe even sitting in the audience one day.
Yeah,
you never know.
That's what I mean. Like maybe that would happen. And so that is in the back of my head, but it's not the driving force. You know, the driving force is more what you guys mentioned, which is that it's had such a good effect on people, and that's what I'm proud of. You know, that's what I really love about it.
Well, Rock, you know, I'm a firm believer that everything that's ever happened in our lives, you know, I've often said if you take a look at your life in reverse and you see how everything just is connected, it kind of makes sense. I think the older we get, as life continues to unfold, you can kind of connect the dots from a backwards glance, more so than forward, of course. And you know, as I'm listening to your story, it's just so incredible. And you know, in a lot of ways, you know, if your biological mother had not given you up for adoption because she felt like that was the best choice for you at that time in her life, you know, where would you be today?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And I think that was kind of the beginning of where you are. I mean, that was kind of the catalyst, if you will, and it propelled you to be. I mean, you know, there's so many people in this situation that could have turned a lot of negative vices, and you took your experience and you put it into something that has become a huge positive, not only for yourself but for mankind as a whole. You know, touching lives. I mean, my life is touched just listening to you as you're doing this interview with us. It's just incredible.
I appreciate that. You know, what's funny is that in my play, there are all these rewind sounds because that's exactly what I do. We rewind and go back, and then we come back forward, and we rewind, we fast forward, we rewind, we fast forward. And you're so right. And, you know, also, you know, you're just saying all the right things about what my process has been because, you know, like the woman who I was married to, we're very close still. And she's so supportive. She was actually part of Steppenwolf in Chicago when I met her. She's a great actor.
Wow, cool.
Wow.
And she said to me one day, she goes, you know, if I hadn't asked you to leave, you never would have written this play. None of this would have happened. And it's so true. And it's so true. And I get to be her in this play so much. And so it's so true. Like whatever happens to us, that's what our life is, you know, and we have to make the most of that, you know, because life is so unpredictable and so dynamic. You know, we have no idea what's going to happen every day. And to me, life is all about, you know, navigating through that and being resilient and trying to have a good life, you know, trying to be as positive as we can and just make something good and try to contribute something at the same time. But I think it is important to rewind, you know, because I was just having a conversation the other day where I said, I don't really believe in change as much as evolving because you can't change anything that's happened to you. You know,
that's so true.
We just accumulate all this life, you know, we just keep accumulating it. And then what are we going to do with that? You know, and so hopefully we grow and we continue to evolve, you know, but we don't really, I mean, you know, I guess it's semantics. I guess you do kind of change, but it's more of an evolution, you know. We become more and more and more and more of who we are, and hopefully if we embrace all of that, we become a lot, you know, and a lot is... My grandmother, when I was 6 years old, once said to me, yo, you are a lot. It's going to be hard for you to ever find a girlfriend or something like that because you are a lot. You're a whole lot, and she was so right. I am so a lot because I carry all the baggage of my whole life with me everywhere. But I carry it like with joy, you know. Like I'm one of those people that doesn't forget anything or anybody, and I take it with me. It's like it's my family, and maybe that's because I was adopted. You know, it's like every experience that I've had and every person that I've ever met and every place that I've ever been, that's what my home is in my life. You know, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, that's how it impacted you.
Yeah.
When I was watching the short video part of your show for Broke Wide Open website, you mentioned if you were ever to get married again, you most likely would adopt children. Is this because of what you went through and you feel the need to help out other children, or where are your thoughts on that?
Well, what's interesting about that scene is that was one of the rewinds, and that's before I ever got married, because before I got married, I never wanted to be married. You know, it's like, I was like, one time I had a girlfriend who all she wanted to do was get married. And I was like, yo, death, taxes, and Rock Wilk will never get married. You can count on those three things. But I did wind up getting married, you know, and I had a beautiful, beautiful relationship. And to this day, like I said, we're close. But I always did feel like I didn't want to have children because I've always felt like there's enough children in this world. We're so overcrowded, and obviously there are so many children who need a home, who need homes,
exactly,
who grow up in very difficult circumstances. So I always felt like I'll probably adopt, but you know, I've learned too that that's very complicated, and it's not it's not an easy thing to do, and people do that lightly sometimes, you know, like they think, you know, people like just go buy BBs, whatever, from other countries, and they think it's going to be simple, and, you know, 15, 20 years later, they're faced with these kids who got all kinds of questions, not only about these adoptive parents, but about their own, you know, lives and where they came from, and if those adoptive parents don't know how to deal with that, it can be very, very complicated, and I was fortunate because, well, first of all, my father died a long time ago, so he didn't have to even deal with any of this, but when I told my mother that I wanted to search for my biological mother, she asked me if she could help. Like, she was, oh, my God, how wonderful would it be for your mother to see how fantastic you turned out to be? I mean,
wow.
So I think that it's, I did feel like that, but, you know, I don't know. I feel like I have other things now. I don't know that I'm ever going to have children, but I don't know what life holds for me in the future now. I'm just, I feel like
you
I've finished
just more or less
script.
Take it day by day at this point, and that's about all you can do. And really, anybody in this world, it's hard to foresee your future and what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. So you do have to take it day by day.
Yeah, because just when you think you know, you don't.
Yeah, of course.
Anything could happen tomorrow, you know. Just when you think you know everything, everything changes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, that's so true.
Well, I'm glad that your adoptive mother was so supportive of you to be able to, you know, support you looking for your biological mother. A lot of adoptive parents don't want that to happen. They don't even tell their children that they're adopted.
Right.
So,
very insecure about it.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it is. And I think it takes a special person to be able to adopt children.
Yeah,
and your mother sounds like she is that person.
Yeah, she
and I'm sure your father was, too.
Yeah, they were amazing. They were crazy, but they were amazing. Such good
Are
people.
There
I
any normal
very...
parents here?
Yeah. I don't know. They were really, really good people, though. And, you know, I was, if anything, I was very difficult for them because I was like a, I was this deep kid, and I was hard to deal with, and I used the adoption card all the time, and I was very, very hard on them. But, you know, in this play, I get to, you know, first of all, I got to take care of both of them when they died. Like, both my parents died of long illnesses, and I was the one who took care of them. And we really made a lot of amends during those times, and I get to talk about regrets that I've had in my life and things that I feel I could have done better in the play. And sharing that with people is really a gift for me because, you know, everybody has that kind of stuff in their life. And for me to put it out there, people talk about that all the time, you know, when they reflect upon things that they could have done better or things that they could have said to somebody that they didn't say. Or, you know, I put that all out there in the play, everything, you know. And so I really kind of strip myself naked for people because what I'm doing is I'm saying, you know, we all have this. So let's talk about it. It'll make the world a much nicer place, you know, if we don't carry this around with us all the time, and it affects you in other ways. You know, it's better to just get it out and deal with it.
Yeah, and sometimes it affects you in ways you don't even know.
Sure.
Yeah. That's absolutely right. And that's, I think it, you know, that you make a very strong point because we all deal with this, and I think we've all had regrets for things we've said or done, and, you know, and we've said, oh, if we just had a do-over, you know, and you know, there are moments in life where you don't get those do-overs, but what you can do is you can kind of glean from it and move forward and, you know, and do things in a much better way or a much different way so that you don't live with that. But processing it and realizing regrets or mistakes is very important, too, because people can live with that for prolonged periods of time, maybe not even realizing it, but it has an external effect, you know, in so many other ways. That's so important.
Absolutely. I agree. In physical ways, in emotional ways, and how you deal with the rest of the world, and in your health. I mean, in so many different ways, you know. You know, that's what we're supposed to do as human beings, is we're supposed to, you know, that's what sets us apart from the animal kingdom, right, is that we can think and we can reason and we're just a little bit higher evolved in our brains. So that's what we're supposed to do. And when we don't do that, I don't think that we function very well.
No, it has a residual effect, not only, you know, in other areas and of our being, but also to those around us. You know, they reap the effects of that as well. You know, realize it or may not intend for that to happen, but it often does, you know, because that's kind of a, you know, an outlet to vent in a kind of subconscious way.
Yeah, I agree.
And it can make it very, very difficult for sure.
Yep.
And you normally vent to your family because you can be the hardest with them, you know, versus telling some of your friends or a stranger or whatever. They're not going to always back you up, whether it's good or bad.
Right. You preach to the choir.
Yeah.
Or you preach. Or you preach to those who you know are not going to like run off into the woods screaming and never come back.
Yeah.
But see, I do it in public, and I'm actually not really connected to anybody in my family, so. That's why literally the people that come into that theater or the people who come to my website or whatever, who follow me wherever they follow me, they have literally become my family. And so that's been interesting for me too, because I have to like draw that line. A lot of people have kind of crossed this line where they think that they know me a little bit better than they actually do, because
right.
If you come to the play, you definitely will know me a lot better than I know you. But you're not in
I have to say your Christmas list has to be awfully long if all those people are family now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, how did you feel the very, very first time you were on stage and you did this play? What were your emotions when you were done?
You know, it's hard to say because it's been such a progression, so it's hard for me to even say when the first time I did this play was. Mm-hmm. I guess the first time was when I was out doing it in the streets. But the first actually show that I did in a small theater, like in an actual indoor space where I booked mm-hmm. the space and did the show, was a very big deal for me because, first of all, I had never acted before. I came from the music business. So I had spent, at the time, it was about 3.5 hours long. So I had spent an incredible amount of time memorizing this work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so first of all, I was afraid I was going to forget everything when the people showed up, you know.
Of course.
But I did it. It turned out really well. It was down in Asbury Park, New Jersey, believe it or not. And, mm-hmm. You know, some people came, and it was a really, really very good experience for me because it was the first time I had done this in a kind of a really, like a formal way, you know, where I
right.
booked it and everything like that. And then afterwards, I think I sobbed for like an hour after the show because I felt like I had released every ounce of my soul and spirit onto that stage. Like,
oh, wow.
I have never experienced anything like that before in my life. I went out to the boardwalk and I just cried for an hour. I had nothing left. And it wasn't that I was sad. I just felt like I spilt everything out of my body. And I do that a lot, you know, after these shows. I just have to cry in the dressing room for about 20 minutes because I give so much on the stage all the time and I receive so much energy from the audience that it's just a lot, you know, it's like a lot to process. So afterwards it takes me a minute to just kind of, you know, calm down and also, you know, what I do is after my shows, instead of going backstage, I walk out into the audience and I try to like touch as many people as I can and accumulate as many hugs as I can.
Oh.
And then I go down to the dressing room afterwards. And so it's a very, it's always an emotional experience. And so that's what happened the first time is I also felt like, you know, this sounds kind of trite and like a cliche, but this is literally what I felt. I felt like this is the reason I was born. Like I had never felt like that before. Like this is why I am on this earth to do this work right here. And so I felt really good about that.
And that's the answer that I expected you to say because I can, you know, even just me with not being an actor or anything like that, if I sat down with a therapist and said everything that happened to me in my entire life,
sure.
You know, I would sit there and probably cry for the next 3 days just to know that somebody listened to me. I got it all off my chest, and maybe now I can work through some of the things that have bothered me and that hindered me from moving forward.
Yeah.
You know, so that I can totally understand that you would go behind stage and cry and feel
and, you know,
like it was a therapeutic cry and you felt it all lifted off your shoulders.
Yeah, and, you know, that's actually what theater is. I mean, theater is not therapy, but theater is, like, for me, what I've learned, and, you know, I learned this from, I've been working with this guy, Stephen Bishop Seeley, who is actually my director now, but I met him 4 years ago down in Asbury Park, and he's a director, he's an actor, he studied, you know, he's got an MFA in theater. His mentor was August Wilson, who's a great, great old playwright. And Stephen, you know, taught me, like he gave me my theater education, really. And one of the things he said to me was, you know, there has to be conflict and resolution. And so when I come out on stage, you know, I look at the audience, and in essence, what I'm saying is, yo, I have a problem. We have 2 hours to solve this problem. We have to do it together. Ready? Let's go.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. And so it is very much like therapy in that way. However, one of the rules of theater is that it cannot be therapy. You know, it has to be, it can't be about you. It has to be about the audience and you. You know, it has to be this shared experience. That's what theater is. And so I think when I first started doing it, it was more therapy. And I think it was, I think people, they enjoyed it, but it was not, it wasn't going to go anywhere like that. But when it when it became more of a shared experience, when it became more about the audience than about me, mm-hmm. then it became more of a theatrical experience. And but it remains, I believe that art at its best is therapeutic. Like I believe that art, again, I'm like full of cliches, but it's so, I really feel these ways. Like I do believe that art saves lives. And I believe art is the most therapeutic thing that we have in our society. It's mm-hmm. the most civilized thing that we have.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Because art is the highest form of communication, you know, and theater and music, you know, these things, this is, you know, as much as a society, we don't really celebrate them unless it's celebrity. But art and in its simplest, most purest form is maybe the most important, valuable thing that we have. Because, let's face it, you know, everybody has this song that reminds them of their first love or mm-hmm. somebody who died or whatever, the greatest moment of their life, or they have a theatrical experience or paintings or something. You know, art is what evokes these feelings, not, you know, not like going to a party or something like that. You know, art is what, so it's just interesting to me how we don't really celebrate that in this country, at least, as much as we just do celebrity.
I have often said, Rock, that music and art is kind of like a universal language because no matter, you know, where people come from, their backgrounds, you know, it is something that everyone can identify with and relate to. And how it speaks to you may speak differently to me or to Pam or the next person, but it's very relatable and it's very universal. And you're right. I mean, it's not celebrated enough in this country as opposed to some other things that are that shouldn't be celebrated as much, you know. But it is such a core thing that unifies and brings people together unlike anything else they will ever encounter.
Yeah, and that's what we need, you know. Really, what I want is for people to come to the theater and think and feel something, because people go through their lives and they don't do those things often. You know, they just go to work or they're in their relationship and they don't move, you know, and they don't feel anything mm-hmm. anymore. They become numb. And it's easy to do that. You know, they like just, you know, put their money away and they get ready for retirement and they move to Florida and they go to the beach for the rest of their lives and that's it. And to come to the theater or to go to a concert or whatever, you know, you feel something, and that's really what life is. You know, like we're trying to feel something, and that's what we do in the theater is we're trying to help people to feel and think.
Bring
and
back
question.
Their emotions. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wake up, you know, like wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of coming to the theater, your show is going to wrap on January 11th. And is there any chance that you'll do a second run of the show at some point down the road?
Well, I mean, I hope so. You know, I hope, I feel like this show is ending, but I feel like I'm right at the beginning because for me, it's taken me 6 years to finish the script. Now it's done. I feel like it's been my child. You know, I've lived in very mm-hmm. difficult circumstances mm-hmm. for the last 6 years. I've been living, you know, in places with, like, no heat and no hot water, and just I've sacrificed my whole life for this. So now I feel like it's my child, and I want to kind of release the grip a little bit and see what happens. But I'm hoping to travel with it. I'd like to do it in regional theaters. You know, I've always wanted to do it on Broadway, but, you know, I think that could happen. There are certainly people in that industry who are interested. But I'm looking to tour it. I'd like to go to colleges. I'd like to go to regional theaters. I'd like to go back to London. I'd like to go overseas with it again because, you know, the more people I reach with it, the more it feels like I'm serving my purpose, and
mm-hmm.
and Broke Wide Open is doing what it's supposed to be doing, you know. So I just want to do it for as many people as humanly possible, and I'm just available to it, you know. So I will definitely say that after I close on the 11th, it's probably the beginning of whatever the next part of the journey is for this play. Yeah.
You know, one of the things, I'm glad you brought up colleges, because as you were talking about where you'd like to go with this, my initial thought is that you should do this in schools, because arts are failing in schools, because those are the first things that are cut with budgets.
Right.
And this would also touch a lot of the kids or college students or so on, you know, with their emotions, and maybe help them get over what they're going through, or at least acknowledge it and start to work on that, and would become better adults for it.
Well, college kids love this show. First of all, just because it's filled with music that they love, and the poetry is like depth poetry jam kind of poetry, and
mm-hmm.
it's very high energy, and I'm running. It's a very physical show. I'm like running around the stage like it's a basketball game. I'm flying all over
mm-hmm.
the place. I have this scaffolding on stage with me that I'm just flinging around, and it looks dangerous on stage. And so they love it just for that. It's very entertaining. But also, you know, kids, you know, college age kids, and even high school kids, they're so hormonal at this point. You know, they're so emotional that, oh my God, the response to those, to that age, is just unbelievable. I mean, they go crazy. It's like a NBA playoff game atmosphere. It's
yeah.
really heightened, you know. So it's really cool. The only thing is, you know, like Broke Wide Open is definitely an adult show. Like I curse a lot, because when I was a young kid, I definitely have a potty mouth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's, you know, I've done it at high schools, and they love it at the high schools. It's, you know, unless it's a very, very conservative place where they just simply will not allow people to curse, then I can't do it in places like that. But the story is a very, you know, there's no gratuitous violence or sex or anything like that. It's just a regular story. It just happens to be a kid who curses a lot, which all kids curse a lot. So,
right.
You know, that sometimes for high school age has been a detriment for me. But, you know, I've done it at high schools too, and the response has just been, it's hard for me to even describe. It's like I'm some kind of prophet to these kids, you know, like they start following me on Facebook and Twitter, and it's like I am their, you know, the person that they follow. Like, and it's beautiful. You know, it's like, it really does. It do exactly what you're saying. They get to feel, and I kind of open their minds and open their hearts to explore as many different things as they want to. And that's,
mm-hmm.
I think that's the greatest gift we could give high school and college kids, is to, you know, give them permission to explore everything, you know, like to question, you know, to ask questions. And because that's the best way they're going to learn, you know.
Exactly.
That's what this does.
Yeah, that's definitely.
Now, I have a 16-year-old that's in high school, and I can just see him learning from your play, from your life, and I would love for him to see this play. But you have to come to Chicago.
I actually did it. I did it in Chicago two summers ago.
I wish I would have known.
At this place called the Gorilla Tango Theater, I did a tour, like this renegade national tour called Broke Wide Open Unplugged, and it was just me on stage, like none of the staged elements, no lighting design, no music. None. I did everything a cappella, and I traveled
mm-hmm.
all over the country, and I did it like in abandoned storefronts and art galleries, but I did it in a small theater in Chicago. And I really want to come back to Chicago, because for me, Chicago is like one of the greatest theater towns, you know, with Goodman and Steppenwolf and the Court. And
oh, yeah.
Amazing theaters. And I just, Steppenwolf for me is like, you know, like Mecca, theater Mecca for
right.
me. Because, you know, they started the same kind of way that I did, you know, like this real renegade theater company and in a basement, you know, and now they're Steppenwolf, you know. And
yeah,
so I
they're
really,
one of the most famous theaters.
Yeah, that's one of my dreams, is to do this play at Steppenwolf or at Goodman. And, you know, I want to go to all of those kind of legendary places. And plus, you know, I know a lot of people in Chicago, and I also feel like I want to go to cities. I just want to go everywhere. You know, I mean, I was going to say I want to go to all these inner city places like Detroit and Chicago and Oakland. I did it in Oakland. That was just a profound experience. But, you know, I want to do it everywhere. You know, I mean, I want to go to Kansas. I mean, I want to do this show everywhere. I feel like everybody relates to this. You know, I'm like a Jewish kid from the Bronx. And, you know, everybody relates to my story. I mean, a guy from Nigeria came up to me after a show, and he's like, oh, my God, your grandmother's exactly like my grandmother. And I'm my grandmother's this Jewish lady from the Bronx. And he's like, my grandmother's from Nigeria. They're exactly the same. And I'm like, what's more beautiful than that? You know, that's
right?
So cool.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
Now, I have to say that first of all, I know that Rain produced the show,
mm-hmm.
Rain Pryor.
Right.
And I read her book. So I see the similarities. Now, is this how you both got connected?
Well, Rain and I met, we did a movie together, actually, earlier this year called Jamesy Boy. It's a movie about a kid who was in prison when he was in high school. And so I went down to Baltimore, and Rain's trailer happened to be right in front of my trailer. And so we met that day, and we became friends. And then Rain actually was one of the people who donated to my 500 Names campaign. She was one of the 500 Names family members.
Okay.
And then I got involved in a situation where, you know, I had raised enough money for a certain amount of time in the theater, but then I was in a place where I could not continue. Like, I ran out of money, and I needed a producer. And so I just happened to be eating breakfast with Rain one day, and she, you know, I had done the show for Rain and her producer when she first came to New York. She had moved to Brooklyn, and I was looking for producers. I needed help, you know. So I asked if I could perform it for her. So I did it for her and her producer, and she brought a couple of friends, and she loved it. And then a few months later, she said to me, okay, I'll produce your show. Now, I approached her because I thought she could find me other producers. I didn't even know that she produced. But, you know, Rain is the artistic director of the Strand Theater down in Baltimore, and she's a very experienced producer as well. So she was kind enough to come on, and so she came on in the middle of this run. She wasn't even there at the beginning. She came on in the middle, and she saved it. You know, I was going to close in the middle of November, and Rain extended it through January 11th, and so that's why I'm still there. So she's really brand new. You know, she came in here now, and she is the exact reason that I'm still in the theater. It's because of her. So she's been very kind and very, very generous, and she's been really cool, you know, so I appreciate her a lot. And, you know, the stories are kind of similar because, you know, her play is about questions of identity as well because, you know, black and Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. The fried chicken and latkes play.
Yeah. And plus, you can imagine being Richard Pryor's daughter. I mean, that's you know, right there. That's got to be like, you know, she has to navigate through her life all the time wondering if people are seeing her or her father, you know. And so I think that's what's so profound about her work is that, you know, I think that she is probably navigating through that same thing. Like, is it me or is it my father? Like, you know, that's got to be a very, that's like questions of identity on steroids. You know, that's a whole nother level.
Exactly. And she went through so much through her life. I mean, my gosh, I'm so proud of her for becoming the person that she is and surviving everything that she's been through. But she still, you know, has to go through a lot probably for the rest of her life by being Richard Pryor's daughter.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about that is I feel like we all have to go through stuff for the rest of our life for being somebody's daughter or son, or you know, maybe you're going through stuff because you weren't Richard Pryor's daughter or son.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like that's what life is. You know, we're going through challenges every day, and it's important to continue to evolve and to grow. Otherwise, you just die. You know, and so Rain has her celebrity experience, and we all have our own experiences, and actually, they're all exactly the same. You know, I mean, to me, you know, I could, it's like for me, I don't really care that she's Rain Pryor, you know what I mean? Like, to me, she's just a person who I've met and who I think, you know, I just see Rain. I didn't even know that she was Richard Pryor's daughter when I met her. I just, you know, it's funny, she looked familiar to me.
I was going to say, her face is identical to her
father. I'm like, damn, why do I know this girl? You know, I just know her for some reason. Yeah. And I found out much, much later that she was Richard mm-hmm. Pryor's daughter. I was like, oh, that's why she looks so familiar. So
yeah.
I feel good about that because I've always just seen Rain, like this person Rain. I
yeah,
know who she was.
Good.
And you know what? I've never even, like, I know she was on Head of the Class and all these TV shows, mm-hmm. but I never saw any of that stuff. So I don't know any of her work other than Fried Chicken and Latkes. I went to see the play. But mm-hmm. I don't know anything else that she's done. And so to me, she's just Rain. You know, she's just like anybody else. And she is, indeed, just like anybody else. You know, we all have our stuff, and Rain is a very special person and very incredibly talented and gifted and very generous. And so, but obviously for her, she is Richard Pryor's daughter, and that's where she – I'm positive that that's where she begins everything from. Every experience
exactly.
that she has starts right there. And that's what we all have, you know, like we all start from somewhere. And
mm-hmm.
that's what's so interesting about all of us and makes us different, but at the same time, exactly the same.
Yeah. And one, you know, I can't help but think this as you're talking about Rain is that, you know, that's just another one of those, things that has happened in your life that happened as a result of what's gone on in your life. You know, if you had not been through what you've been through and been on the path you've been on, you may never have never crossed paths with Rain Pryor, and or she you for that matter. And for her to extend your show, that is a real testament to her belief in you and what you're doing. And
absolutely,
so,
because
you know,
she wanted, you know, she extended that show even when, you know, after the hurricane, when nobody was coming. I mean, she extended it because she believed in it. You know, like after Hurricane Sandy, nobody was going anywhere in New York City, but
right.
I was showing up at the theater every night still doing the show, and she extended it. And so for that, I'm very, very grateful because, you know, part of this run for me has been, you know, a lot of people thought it would be very difficult for me to do 8 shows a week or even 6 nights a week. You know, I've done the show. I only have Mondays off. And if you see the show, it's very, very physical, not only physically like running around, but also my voice, you know. It's
well, you talk really fast.
Yeah,
it's almost
four
like
hours
a rap that you're doing.
Yeah, you know, a woman from the Huffington Post described it as like a symphony, and that's what it's mm-hmm. like. That's the way I approach it. It's like it's this symphony of monologue, because I come from a musical place, but it's definitely it's not poetry really, and it's not music. It's everything together. It's really mostly monologue, but it is musical, and so it really helped me. It helped my confidence knowing that I can handle this kind of run and that I actually, in fact, got stronger with every night. I mean, the only day I don't feel good is the day I'm off where I'm just like, damn, I just want to be at the theater, you know. So she's given me a great gift by keeping me in that theater. And I'm a little sad that it's closing on the 11th, but at the same time, I'm very excited, too, because I feel like I've completed a long phase of my life that I'm ready to close the door on that and open the next door and
a
see
new
what's
one,
coming
right.
Up. Yeah, so I'm excited.
Now, there's
think,
also an amazingly beautiful painting or mural behind your head with people from different backgrounds. Was this something you came up with? And
yes.
Or what does it stand for?
I'm so glad you asked me that question because I love talking about these guys. So that painting is something that I've wanted to do. Like I always said, when I do a real run in a theater, what I want to do is I want the audience to see themselves in this painting behind me. Like I want them, I've always said to people, I wish you could see what I see on stage. Like, because what I am absolutely most proud of about this play is that it has the most beautiful multicultural audience. Like everybody loves this. There is no target audience at all. Everybody loves it. And that is not a conventional theater audience. I mean, conventional theater is older white people or gay people, and that's who goes to the theater. But this is like, I got people from the projects coming, I got people from the streets, I got people who have never been to the theater have enjoyed this play. And so, and I've seen people all over the country and then all over the world. And so I had met this guy, Jason Cicino, who's an incredible artist from Asbury Park, New Jersey. I met him when I first went down there to live for a couple of years. And we had always kind of threatened to work together. We just immediately bonded. We've had similar things happen in our lives, and he came to the show, and he really loved it, and he loved my album, and his work really, really affected me. His art is just so amazing. It's just hard to even describe. And he's a muralist. So when I, you know, when I got ready to do this, I contacted him and we got together and he said to me, what do you want? So I told him, I want this painting to represent all of the people that I've seen over the past 6 years, like on the trains, in the streets, in the theaters. I want everybody to be represented, and I want it to represent where I built this, which is under the bridges, on fences, and in the streets, and on the train. So he sketched out this painting for me that just took my breath away. And then what he did was he called his brother, whose name is Lee Alston. And they had not worked together in this way. They're both incredible artists. And so this became 5 months every day of their lives. It was a catharsis
wow.
for them, of two brothers coming together who had, you know, they did some healing themselves together as well. And they worked on this project together, and it was their life's work. I mean, this, you know, like when they finally finished, they had this big dinner. They had me come down to Asbury Park. They literally hung the painting in the trees in their backyard. That's because it's 26 feet high. It's three stories
oh, wow.
high, and it is the most magnificent work of art, and it's just canvas. It's an oil and acrylic canvas painting, and it's just like, you know, the spirit behind it is perfect for my play. They just made it happen, you know. I raised enough money to pay them, but they got paid nothing close to what they should get paid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They basically
mm-hmm.
did it as a favor, and it's just, it's perfect, you know, and now it's my painting, and so... you know, and the other thing is, Jason, you know, he said, look, you know, this is such a great opportunity for me, because how often do I get to paint something that people outside of a gallery will get to see? I mean, he goes, you're,
mm-hmm.
like,
so
people,
true.
So many people are going to see his work. And you know what? He's been, like, I had a woman who wanted to interview me, but she writes for art magazines. And I was like, yo, why are you writing about me? You need to write
yeah.
about Jason and Lee.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so they got this beautiful article written about them in this prominent art magazine. And so that, but that painting is just, and I have hundreds of pictures after shows of people taking their picture in front of that painting after these shows. It's,
oh, I can
everybody.
Imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the eyes in that painting, they're so unbelievably emotional and real. And so
mm-hmm.
I use that, you know, during the performance, I look to these people and I know them, I've named them. And it's just, it's like I can't imagine doing the play without that painting now. That's a problem, because I need theaters with at least 26 feet
right.
under the lights. So that's a little issue. But,
and after the run, it's going to be kind of hard hanging that up in your living room.
Well, first of all, I could never do that. But
yeah.
that painting, believe it or not, folds up to a tiny little square. I could just literally
oh, really?
Put it in my backpack.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. It's like, it's unbelievable. It's just canvas. It's really light. So you just take it down, fold it up, and put it in my backpack, and I could take it anywhere in the country or anywhere in the world I want to go.
And, you know, that would be a good thing to carry with you. Mm-hmm.
You know what it feels like to me? I don't know if you remember this, but a long time ago there was an AIDS quilt that traveled
yeah.
all over the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what this feels like to me. It's like, you know, people love this painting so much, and I want to take this painting everywhere in the world, because I want people to ask me about it. So I can not only talk about these two incredible guys who did it, who, by the way, you know, they have had so many friends come to my show to support them. Everybody loves these guys. They're incredible.
Yeah.
But I want people to see this painting, because everybody who looks at the painting says that they think they know somebody in it. And I find that really interesting. Like, that looks just like somebody I know.
Yeah.
Because they really, really represented every culture on this earth. They represented everything.
Yeah,
so,
it's definitely a multicultural painting.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. When I saw it, it was like so beautiful.
It's
something
so beautiful.
That touches your heart when you look at it.
Yes, it's, you know, the minute you walk in the theater and you see that painting, you know that something special is about to happen, because, you know, it's like nothing. You've already got your money's worth just looking at that painting. You know, it's like walking
mm-hmm.
into like the Museum of Modern Art or something like that. It's such a gorgeous work of art, so I'm so grateful to be able to have that thing behind me every night.
Well, you know, Rob, what I have taken from this interview today with you is just that, you know, you were born of a situation that, you know, so many children encounter in their lifetime, and out of it, you know, just looking at the painting, I was actually looking at the painting while you were talking about it, and your purpose is very clear. You were put here to unify people, and to bring people together in a way that just is unheard of. And it's just it's unbelievable what you're able to do and what you've been able to do out of your experience to share it in such a way that people, you know, are touched by it and they're moved by it and they can completely identify with it, no matter what their lives have held, you know, their experiences. But they're all, as unique as they are, it has helped to bridge so many gaps between people. And that really is what the human race is supposed to be about, is being one as mankind.
I so agree. And you know, true. You know, when I was raising money for that 500 Names campaign, I always would write back to people saying, thank you. You are forever connected to me and Broke Wide Open, and it's my honor and privilege to have you. And that's what this project feels like to me. It's like an honor and a privilege, because I agree with you. I mean, that's really what's more important than unifying people. It's been what's most important to me in my life since I was a little kid. I mean, I'm the kid who, like, told his first grade teacher that she was a racist. So I've always been very, very sensitive to these issues of people being separated. And if my project is like unifying people and bringing people together, then I'm good. You know, I'm like, wow, that is the greatest thing anybody could say to me. That if that's how people look at me, I feel like my life has been lived well. You know, and I've not just taken up space, as I was saying. You know, that's my hope, is that I'm just making some kind of really positive contribution with this. That's what I want.
Yeah, well, without even seeing the play, I know that you have.
I appreciate that.
Everything that's been said or written and things that you've said just during this interview, I know you've touched a lot of lives and made a difference.
I appreciate it, and I feel like I have. And I've been, you know, everybody who's come has touched my life. Like, I feel so selfish sometimes because I'm just taking all of it. You know, like, I just, that's why I tell people, when you come to my show, you better bring a hug, because I am taking it. And I get so much from that audience. You know, like, that's why I tell people, I wish you could be on stage and feel what I feel, because it's just so, it's like good nutrition for me. You know, it just feels so good. And, you know, it's just, so I know it goes back and forth. You know, it's going back and forth. And that's what makes it good theater, I think, is that, you know, it's not just me putting something on somebody, it's us. You know, we're in here together, and we've solved this problem together. And then at the end of the play, I'm not going to tell you the ending because I want everybody to come, but at the end,
well, of course,
happens, we all come to the ending together, you know, and it's a beautiful ending, and it took me 6 years to write it, so I'm so happy about it.
Well, I have to say that to our listeners, anybody that wants to see the play, and if you're in New York or around the New York area, it's at the 45th Street Theater. Go to the BrokeWideOpen.com website to read about it, read about Rock and what he's been through and how he came to this point. And there's videos, there's pictures, there's a lot of things that you can learn about it. And you can buy your tickets at the BrownPaperTickets.com website. There's shows every night, Tuesday through Sunday at 8 p.m. Do you do any day shows or just the 8 p.m. show?
Not for the next 10 days. We did. We were doing Wednesday and Saturday matinees, but now there's only 10 shows left. So it's just at night, every night at 8 o'clock from now until
8 o'clock. Okay. Yeah. And, of course, that's Eastern time because you're in New York.
Yeah.
You can also follow Rock on Twitter. I believe I have your correct Twitter account. It's at Rock Wilk, right?
Yep.
W-I-L-K. And give him a shout-out if you don't get to talk to him at the play, if you're there and you get to see it and he's, you know, done such a great job and you want to tell him or you want to share your experience with him, follow him on Twitter and give him a shout-out. I'm sure he'd be happy to, you know, respond to or reply to you.
Yeah, definitely. And find me on Facebook, too, under Rock Wilk, R-O-C-K-W-I-L-K. I love that.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your experience and your life with us. And Dawn and I would definitely love to see the play, and we hope that you get to make it to in our areas in Chicago, North Carolina, and everywhere for that matter. I want to see you in more schools. I want to see you in more theaters and everywhere. And it's such an empowering experience.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Yes, I hope definitely. So, too. From your mouth to God's ears. Thank you.
Yes. Now, can
That's
people
right.
still donate on your website for this?
Yes, they can. They can go to the 500 names. There's a 500 names page,
mm-hmm.
and they can donate. They can donate right there if they want to.
Okay,
Anything,
yeah, I saw the donate button, and I just wasn't sure if that's still an ongoing thing. So they can donate for however long just to get
yes.
you to keep going with the play.
Yes, they can.
Okay.
That would be greatly appreciated.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
We'll go ahead and we'll tweet out the information, and we'll post it on our Facebook as well as our website. Our website is take2radio.com. On Twitter, it's at Take2Radio, and that's the number 2. And we'll get the information out there for you. And we
okay.
wish you much more success in your life and happiness and a feeling of peace.
You too. Thank you so much. And find me on Facebook, both of you guys. Friend me on Facebook, too.
Okay,
we'll do. Certainly will. And Happy New
All right,
Year
thank
to you.
Thank you so much. Happy New Year. I just hope we have great 2013 for everybody, safe and
all
healthy right. and all those good things.
Happy, healthy, and blessed.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks again, Rock,
right.
and
Thank
you take
so
care
much.
Of yourself. God bless you.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. You and I were discussing behind the scenes, you know, how much this has been one of our favorite interviews and how it impacted us, and I know it impacted you especially because you had things that you thought about as he was speaking.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. There's no way not to think about it. It's just kind of almost bizarre how he just kind of landed in our lap just a few days ago in terms of you being, you know, contacted about him and his show. And you really, I mean, even in as I was doing the prep work for the interview and looking at his bio and looking at the info about the show, I really did not have that good of an idea of just how empowering and how far-reaching, how much impact the show has had on so many people until, you know, he was on air and he was talking about the whole experience. And
all
wow.
over the world it's impacted people, not
just
in the U.S., you know?
I'm just blown away. I mean, there are people out there every day who are, you know, doing great things for our country and our world, and that's not to minimize that. But he is one of the few people that I have actually had the privilege of meeting in my lifetime where I feel like his purpose is God-given. I mean, he is just completely, you know, unifying people in ways that you just don't see, especially in this day and time with society being the way it is. He's kind of like that bridge, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
it was extremely inspiring. I was very, very taken and very, you know, amazed by, you know, just listening to him talk was very mesmerizing as to how he has taken this journey that he's been on and has turned it into something positive. And I think that's the key with anything we encounter in life, is that whenever we have an event that happens, whether it's expected or unexpected, but when life curls these curves at us that come out of nowhere that we don't see coming, we have no way of knowing that they could ever happen, and they do. I think how we handle them is truly the key to how we survive them, and he is
right.
definitely a survivor. And, he was so right. You know, it wasn't as much about his story of adoption and, you know, searching for his birth mother as it was about searching for who he was. And,
right.
you know, because even though we're all born of someone, at the end of the day, we are somebody. And really finding out who we are in the grand scheme of things is really what matters the most. You know, our biological parents get us here. But as once we're here, you know, we really do have to figure out who we are and where we belong. And I think a lot of people struggle with that because of life's experiences. And they do try, you know, they do have a hard time trying to find out what they want to be when they grow up or where they fit in or if they even fit in. I mean, there's so many different parameters that can be very hard for folks. So
well, if you think about it, even as a grown person, a so-called adult, you tend to lose your identity a lot of times, like when you get married, then you're Mrs. So-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have children and you're so-and-so's mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to also keep your own identity there because it's too easy to lose it. Once your children are grown and moving out of the house or say you get a divorce or whatever, then you have to figure out who you are all over again.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing to also keep your own identity as well as being a mom or a wife or whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
I think that, you know, this play opens up a lot of different, what's the word I'm looking for? A lot of different ways to find who you are and to make you think about who you are is what it is.
And I like the fact of how he approached it because he really revealed himself in ways that, gosh, the average person just would not get up on
Never.
Stage and
yeah.
open up their, you know, it's almost like opening up the inside of them and going, look at me, look at the
right.
inside of me. And, you know,
right.
and not to get religious or spiritual, but, you know, the whole thing I was thinking about, too, is I've heard the story through my life of how, you know, we get to heaven one day and God will have
mm-hmm.
this book and it'll have everything in it, everything
right.
about us, the good, the bad. You know, and as he was talking about his own experience and he's getting up on stage and he's, you know, he's talking about how he just really let himself go and really revealed himself to the audience, complete strangers. I mean, that had to take a leap of faith and courage in itself, you know, just to be able to, because, you know, the world is so full of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, you know, it's full of judgment and it's full of, you know, a lot of opinions and controversy and things. And, you know, to put yourself up there on that platform, really in a way, I think it was such a positive thing because there was no stone left unturned. There was nothing anyone in the audience could say, oh, but I bet he left nothing out. And so there was not anything that anyone could come back with and judge him for because he'd already put everything out there that could be put out there. It removed all speculation. It removed any doubt. It was just truth in its rarest form, you know, I think sometimes if we could all adopt that and
mm-hmm.
learn to be a little bit more revealing of who we are, it would minimize a lot of the judgments and the things that we, you know, presume about people or one another, or we tend to think this person is this way or that way because they aren't revealing themselves. We're kind of speculating based on what little we do know. But when you know everything there is to know about someone, the good, the bad, the in-between, it takes all that away. And but it's a hard thing to do for most people. I don't know that I can do it. I'm pretty open book, but I don't know that I can get up in front of a crowd and go, okay.
No, and, you know, that's what I was thinking as he was talking, too. You know, and you mentioned how much courage he has, and I couldn't agree with you more. I'm thinking about what I went through in my life, and it's been, you know, rocky, and it's not been all happy, you know, let's dance every day and sing every day joyous songs. But I couldn't imagine going on stage and ripping myself wide open like that, you know, because sometimes you don't even discuss everything that's going on with yourself with a close family member or your close friend. And here he is in front of thousands of people
yeah.
all over the world doing this. And I could see and feel what he feels without even going to the play, but just by him talking about where he would go backstage and cry after every show. Because, my gosh, what a relief that is. We as
yeah.
society hold so much in.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't talk about it. We don't do things about it. And that's why we're all, you know, have some anger issues at times.
That's
or
right.
we're uptight and we're, you know, we don't have as many people around us because you're afraid to open up and have them judge you and or give you some kind of comment or advice that you don't want. You just want
exactly.
them to listen.
Yeah. And he created that platform to do just that. But you know, it goes beyond the bounds of courage. I mean, I think he realized with this show that he realized before he did the show what his purpose was, because I don't see how anyone could put themselves in that kind of vulnerable position day in, day out, for the length of time that he has, unless he believed that he was put here and this was his passion and this is what
right.
he was born to do.
Right.
No matter how much
encouragement he got from somebody else to do this,
exactly.
if he wasn't ready or feeling that he should do this, it wouldn't have gotten done.
And I think, too, it's a very strong testament to how well he came through in dealing with the fact he was adopted, because he went from, you know, kind of questioning it to the why to embracing it, because he realized that had I not been born, I wouldn't be here now. Had I not been given up for adoption, I wouldn't have had the amazing adoptive parents that I was, you know, accepted into after being in foster homes 3 different times, you know.
Right.
And so for him, he took it and he tried to turn what could have potentially been a negative and could have really dictated the course of his life in a negative way, and turned it into something very positive. He found the positive in it, and he embraced the fact that it is what it is. It is what happened to me. But he didn't let that be his undoing. He didn't let that be his demise. And he didn't live his life on the mantra of, oh, woe is me, I was adopted. You know, he found a way to make it into something beautiful and just something that wasn't just for him, but was for others. And I think that's what's helped him the most, is because when we can give to other people, we get back tenfold what we've given. And, you know, there's no doubt about that,
right.
Which has probably been his biggest healing of all of this.
Right.
You know, so great, great interview indeed.
I definitely enjoyed it, and I hope to God that we get to see it. Too bad we're not able to hop on a plane right now and just go to New York.
You know,
just
I wish
one
we were.
Show, you know?
I would
do it in a second flat. I tell you that. I would definitely go. But I have belief that it will continue on. I think there will be enough people in the higher power area that have seen this and, you know, believe in him and think that it should continue. And again, I encourage our listeners to go to the BrokeWideOpen.com website. And like he said, even give a dollar. You know, each person that gives a dollar, that adds up pretty quickly, especially if you've got, you know, 500 people, there's $500 right there. Now, I don't know exactly what it takes to put a play on, but a little bit of amount of money, you know, is a step closer to being able to bring this play to another city or even keep it in New York and extend it out.
I know. And please get out and support him. The show runs until January 11th, and so it makes me, want, like you say, just want to get on a plane and go and see it, you know, before it ends. And I'm like you. I have no doubt that he will have a second run of this show and beyond. I think that what he has done with this show is just the beginning for him. Even though this has been a journey that he's been on for the last 6 years between writing and putting it together and now performing it, but I think that all had to be groundwork that was laid to bring him to this point now. But I think it's going to get picked up and it'll be a major Broadway show. I really believe that because of what it has meant to so many people in such a short period of time.
I believe that, too. And, again, the website to purchase tickets, if you'd like to go to the show at the 45th Street Theater, is brownpapertickets.com, 8 p.m. show. Pick up a ticket. Looks like general price is $35. And if you pick it up at Will Call, there's no additional fee. If you get it through the website, it's $37.22, including the service fee. And I think it's well worth the money. Just take it and go. But yes, we want to thank everybody for joining us again today, and we hope that you've gotten something out of this interview for yourselves. And we look forward to joining you again for another show. Take care, everybody. God bless. Dawn, you want to say any closing remarks?
Just a phenomenal interview, and just remember the name, Rock Wilkes, because I think he's going to become a name that you're going to hear more and more. And we just appreciate your support. And also, blessed New Year to all of you out there. So we want to say thank you for the success and the support you've given us since we aired just a mere short weeks ago, seven or 8 weeks ago now, and counting, whatever it is, on Wild Camp. But anyway, thank you so very much. We do appreciate it, and we look forward to many, many more times like this in 2013.
And follow us on Blog Talk Radio. They'll send you out an email every time we have an upcoming guest. Don't forget to check out our website at take2radio.com. .com. It has our previous interviews on there, as well as our upcoming interviews and many more things that you can look at and enjoy, as well as we'll put the information for Rock on the website. And on Twitter, at Take2Radio. Dawn is at Dawn Take2Radio. Again, the number 2 as always. Everybody have a blessed New Year's and good night.